On Monday, the World Health Organization declared Latin America is the new epicenter of the coronavirus pandemic. The WHO said there are nearly 938,000 COVID-19 related cases throughout Latin America and the Caribbean, and almost 50,000 deaths a day. Brazil, Chile, and Ecuador lead Central and South America with the most cases. Sunshine returns this afternoon in the DMV. Currently in Washington, it's partly cloudy and 77. In New York, it's cloudy and 73. I'm Askia Muhammad. Thank you for listening to WPFW Washington and WBAI New York.
Greetings, sisters and brothers. Welcome to Black Star News Show. I'm your host, Milton Alimadi, on WBAI Radio 99.5 FM, New York. Today, my guest is actually my colleague, Colin Benjamin, managing editor of Black Star News. And today, we're going to focus this program on the public extrajudicial execution of George Floyd, innocent, unarmed, black man, by white racist police officer Derek Chauvin in Minneapolis with his three racist accomplices. They're all racist because none of them attempted to even block that public execution. One of the most ugly executions we've ever witnessed, recorded on video. But before we get into that, listeners, you know how I always start my show. This is listener-supported radio, and that's how we're able to bring you the unfiltered, the type of information, news, analysis that you wouldn't get anywhere else. So we need your support. So I'd like for you to pick up the phone and dial 516-620-3602. And any pledge that you offer to support WBAI is welcome and will be put to good use. You can also support this station by going to give, and then the number 2, WBAI.org. And you can do that by adopting one of your favorite shows or more than one show. Now, as I always say, I hope Black Star News Show is one of your favorite shows. The money is taken out of your credit card or your debit card on a monthly basis. And today, I will also once again read from a segment of my book, The Hearts of Darkness, How White Writers Created the Racist Image of Africa. And particularly at a time like this, we now know the timeless nature of why we should always examine racist depictions, representations, and demonizations. And that obviously was my whole motive and inspiration for writing that book. Always intrigued by demonization of Africans and people of African ancestry, historically and in our contemporary era, and the impact it has on the people that are demonized and those who demonize them. And we'll discuss that also in our show today. Colin Benjamin, welcome to Black Star News Show.
Thank you, sir. How are you doing?
I'm good under the circumstances.
I know. It's really, you don't even know where to start right now. It's so crazy.
Well, you know, radio time goes quickly, so we will get started. George Floyd. Mm-hmm. Have you ever seen anything like that?
No, not. You know, it's between the video, and we have to thank that young sister for capturing the video as well as the audio, because I think along with the audio of him pleading, you know, those words that we heard before, I can't breathe, as well as him calling out for his mother, who they said, you know, has been deceased for a couple of years. It just brings out, you know, the graphic nature of how he was killed. So no, I think none of us have really seen nothing like that on video. And I think that's why it's leading to these reactions that we're seeing, not only just across America, but, you know, we have protests that went on in the UK, as you know. I heard of protests in Germany and other places as well. So that just shows you how much, you know, seeing that image
impact
as well as that audio.
And actually, Carlin, as you're speaking, mm-hmm. just listening to you describe it, I was choking up mm-hmm. and almost tearing. Just listening to you
I actually cried a couple of times, to be honest.
But I'm telling you, just listening to you right now as you describe it,
yeah,
it had an impact that I did not realize it would have, just listening to you talk about it.
Right.
And you're right when you speak about the audio. The audio also revealed something else. Mm-hmm. The audio revealed the ugly nature mm-hmm. of racist officers mm-hmm. like Derek Chauvin. Mm-hmm. The audio revealed him saying, get up.
Right, correct.
Get up and get into the car.
Correct. While he's and on
obviously
his
obviously, he knew that was impossible because he was handcuffed. He was pinned down by two other racist police officers. And he correct. Had his knees on the man's neck. He is killing him.
For nearly 9 minutes.
Telling him to get up. You know why he said that? Because he was recording it. He was already manufacturing false alibi.
Right.
To late utter on say this man was resisting, and you can hear me telling him to get up.
Right.
This is the mind of a calculating killer. But it's not unusual, because if we look at every such incident, mm-hmm. there's always a cover-up.
Correct.
It means each and every officer, number one, knows the department is going to bat for them mm-hmm. and go with their narrative.
The department and the prosecutors as well.
And the prosecutors, and often the gullible corporate media as well.
Correct.
In mm-hmm. Minneapolis, the police department had already manufactured that bogus press release.
Correct. Well, this, but as you actually pointed out as well in your last piece, this is a routine PR practice that they do. You know, in spite of even when we have evidence to the contrary, they will put out statements that is at odds with what we see. Basically, like people have been saying, telling us don't believe your lying eyes. So, you know, and then they expect us to, you know, to have trust in the police, to have faith in the police when they routinely lie. When they arrest a suspect, they tell you that, you know, what you say can and will be used against you, right, when they're Mirandizing you. But somehow officers are able to, like, lie on official documents and get away with it. You know, that's another aspect of the whole, like, you know, cover up, and it's just wild. And
absolutely,
this one has to be the one that things start to change the other way. This has to be it.
Okay, so you're saying there's a possibility that this time could be different. That's what you're saying.
If it's not this time, I don't see what it will be. When are we going to see something worse than
just
this?
Just judging by what we've seen in terms of the vigorous reaction, the uprising we've seen, I think we should not even try to contemplate the consequences, the alternative rather,
right,
if this one does not lead to fundamental change.
Right. This has
but I'm
to
glad,
be.
Colin, I'm glad you brought up the spinning and spin doctoring and the public relations department of police department. Mm-hmm. And in fact, in this second half of the show today, mm-hmm. I think we should try to focus on some possible solutions. So in this first mm-hmm. half, let's talk about these incidents. Mm-hmm. But I do want to bring up Eric Garner, because mm-hmm. in that situation, there was also a very ugly cover-up attempt and spin mm-hmm. by the New York Police Department. Eric Garner, of course, is the first made that term, I can't breathe.
I can't breathe. Yeah.
Popular, because he uttered it, how many times? Was it 8 times as he was being lynched?
I think it was more than that, like 11 to 13 times or something okay. like that. Yeah.
When he was being lynched by
Pantaleo
of the New York Police Department. Mm-hmm. The first story that appeared in the New York Times after that incident, was it July 17, 2014? I believe it was July 17.
That sounds about right.
Yeah, 2014. The headline of that article said, Staten Island man dies after police tried to arrest him. Mm-hmm. That was the headline. A spin job coming yeah. from the police department, a major newspaper like the New York Times, just swallowing it up. Mm. And let me read you a little bit of how that article then started. A Staten Island man died Thursday after police tried to arrest him mm-hmm. on the street, not far from the Staten Island ferry, police mm-hmm. said. Mm-hmm. The man, Eric Garner, 43, went into cardiac arrest as he was being placed into custody mm-hmm. around 4:45 p.m. on Bay Street, comma, across mm-hmm. from Tompkinsville Park, mm-hmm. comma, the police said. He was pronounced dead a short time later at mm-hmm. Richmond University Medical Center on Staten Island, mm-hmm. police said. Mm-hmm. Now, if you read something like this, describing the time it happened, the location, opposite a park, and anything, you see how perfectly this is crafted? Mm-hmm. There's not a hint that this man was actually brutally executed.
Right.
But coming from a very different journalistic perspective and training, mm-hmm. when you and I read something like this, we see spin all over the place. And you know mm-hmm. what I actually did? Mm-hmm. I remember I wrote an editorial mm-hmm. on BlackStarNews.com criticizing this article in the New York Times. Mm-hmm. Just tearing it up. And lo and behold, not surprisingly, eventually this article on our website was deleted.
Was deleted, right.
Not
right.
by us. We have no interest and business in deleting our own article.
Deleting our own story, right.
Mm-hmm. Since we don't have evidence to pinpoint who deleted it, we won't name names.
Right, right.
But a smart reader can just use their own judgment. That article was deleted from our website, criticizing this.
And see,
swallowing of the New York Times spin. Mm-hmm. Go ahead.
See, here's it's so much things there, because here's the thing too. They like to give us a lot of talk about supposed objective journalism. Now, in what you just read, look at how many times you said police said. What about the journalists going and find out what the people say? Who were there and who witnessed what happened? What about that?
Absolutely.
And see, the thing too is, you know, you get a lot of this kind of sanitized reporting. One of the things that has bothered me over the last several years, as you know, I have written so many articles, so many columns. In fact,
Not only that, so you're working
so,
on a book.
In fact, so much so, right, that
you actually
told me that, hey, you're writing so much about this, why don't write a book? But yeah. But if you know...
By the way, let me interrupt you for a second. Uh-huh. Because sometimes we forget to say these things. Mm-hmm. Listeners, obviously I'm biased, but I'm telling you, this is one of the best columnists in these United States when it comes to police brutality issues. Colin Benjamin. You can Google his name, read his articles on blackstarnews.com, and I invite you to go to blackstarnews.com and read some of the editorials that we've been writing right now on these issues, not just this specific case, but historically. So I just want to make sure that people are aware of that. And in fact, he is working on a book, and this book cannot come at a better time.
And see, let me just say something.
Please continue.
Let me just interrupt you. No, that's okay. That's fine. Let me just jump off from where I was going from it to just say this. As you know, we were doing excerpts from the book, but we decided to stop when COVID burst on the scene, so to speak, and take over everything because we didn't feel, you know, it was right to do it. But then you realize that even while COVID is going on, right? Next thing
there's
we know,
there's no letter.
Ahmaud Arbery, Ahmaud Arbery, then Breonna Taylor in her house. Now this. So you realize even with a pandemic that's killing us,
there's never
they decide that they still got to kill us too.
And right here in New York, while there was no killing, there was brutal manhandling of individuals supposedly to enforce social distancing when only one particular race was being targeted. And I hate really using the word race.
And we all
evolved from Africa. So let's say one particular pigmentation.
Right.
Dark pigmentation. Black and Latino.
Yeah. And the police commissioner had the nerve to try to say that there is no racial bias with the. So it is so utterly insane and ridiculous.
Colin. Amy Cooper let loose that secret.
Oh, yes.
You can no
a black man.
You can no longer fool us that you're not aware how pervasive and deep-seated racism is.
And see, let me...
Amy, and that's one good thing I must say. Mm-hmm. Thank you very much, Amy Cooper.
Cooper, exactly.
You horrible racist. Thank you for letting loose that secret. When she actually told Christian Cooper, you know what I'm going to do? I'm going to call the police on you.
I'm going
to lie on you. And the end of the day, you know what? It's going to be my word against your word.
Against your word.
You are a black man. And you know why she was so ruthless and reckless? What happened with Tamir Rice? The police arrived on the scene, shot this kid.
Within seconds.
Without uttering a word.
Within seconds.
Same thing might have happened to Christian Cooper.
Right.
Yet she was willing to go with that. Just because he told her properly and correctly to leash her dog.
Right.
That to me is quite chilling. So now this police commission in New York City, as you point out, cannot come out to us with this.
And see, let me connect to those two things towards something too. Miss Cooper, while she's telling him, you know, I'm going to call the police and tell I'm being threatened by an African-American man, she's doing it while he is videotaping her. And then when you look at with Chauvin, right, he's there being videotaped and he's still doing it. So when you look at
those arrogance,
see them where they still feel, well, okay, don't matter. You're videotaping
at the end of the day, it is my whiteness and white supremacy that will prevail. In fact, in the case of Derek Chauvin, he even adjusted his body to make sure that he would exert more weight.
He adjusted his body.
On that left knee. He had his hand in the pocket. And at some point, there's another video where he actually pulled out something that may have appeared to be mace or something. Maybe a stun. Pulled out something.
I think that was when the protesters,
they could no longer stand it because they were being traumatized just watching
you kill a guy slowly, right?
But Colin, I think you're, and this is not surprising. This issue was so emotional. I think we're going all over the place.
All over the place.
About this, I think you pointed out the whole issue of COVID-19, right? Mm-hmm. I think it was a combination of all these factors, right?
Absolutely.
The fact that we are being times more, the death rates up to 6 or 7 times more in our communities. Yep. And then you combine that with the Aubrey case that you also mentioned in Georgia, where these two rednecks, a father and son team, the McMichaels, chase 25-year-old Aubrey, shoot him to death with a short gun, and they have another redneck videotaping it. Right. And there was a cover-up there, was arrested, eventually arrested after.
Well, of course he worked for the same police department that was supposedly investigating him killing Mr. Aubrey, right? So
exactly.
We know how that goes. So
then from there we go to Breonna Taylor.
Killed in her home, right? In her home, like at Tatiana Jefferson and Botham Jean. Right? And
exactly. And then from there.
Go ahead. No, I was going to say, and like that Marine up in Westchester who was also murdered inside his home.
Right. But I'm saying these recent cases, but then you go from Breonna, you go to Amy Cooper and that thing she said in Central Park.
Right.
And then you top that with Gregory Floyd. So to me, it was not surprising, this combustibility coming together. Yes. In fact, you recall that editorial we wrote that we published the same day of that incident?
Yes.
At the end of the editorial, and people, you can go back and read it. We said people like Derek Chauvin obviously are not paying attention or don't even care about these incidents that, you know, I just enumerated right now. But if people can only take so much, we said in that editorial, there's going to be a spark that could lead to a conflagration.
Right.
And we did not know that
it was coming right next, right?
That same night, the conflagration would begin in Minneapolis. Enough is enough. This is just too much. Listeners,
it's an accumulation of anger and all of these.
Let me just welcome listeners that are just coming in. If you're just tuning in, this is Black Star News Show on WBAI 99.5 FM radio. I'm your host, Milton Alimadi. And today, I'm in conversation with my colleague, Black Star News Managing Editor, Colin Benjamin, and we're discussing the Gregory Floyd public execution by so-called police officer Derek Chauvin. These are not police officers. We have many outright racist, really demonic, taking advantage of the police uniform and badge and gun to fulfill their agenda. How can an individual like that be referred to as a police officer? And these three accomplices, all one of them had to do was to push this man away from Gregory Floyd's body before 8.8 minutes and 46 seconds. He might have lived when he started saying, please, please, I can't breathe. In fact, he said, you're going to kill me.
Yes, he did say
that. At that moment, one of those three accomplices could have said, enough is enough, and pushed him off. Yet to all four of them, this man's life was worthless. They should all be charged with first-degree murder. This is as premeditated as it comes. Now it turns out they may have known each other or have interacted.
Yeah, they apparently work as bouncers at an establishment. The owner actually confirmed this.
Did something happen that annoyed
Derek
Chauvin and said, one day I'm going to get you?
Get him, yeah.
And he found a perfect opportunity to carry out his demonic agenda?
That's an aspect to be explored, I would say.
Every angle must be looked at. The cover-ups that police departments always perpetrate with willing media. I think the New York Times should adopt a policy where in cases like that, you might say, okay, we have to put out something based on what time we're getting this information. But after you discovered you are the victim of a spin job by the police department, do you not owe readers a lengthy editorial commentary and explanation, and assure readers that we will make sure the police department does not pull a spin job on us again, and for us to pass on that spin job to the public. After all, you are a newspaper with a huge circulation. You have a long history. You have respectability in many quarters. By the way, I did promise readers that I would, listeners rather, that I would read a little bit from my book, The Hearts of Darkness. Let me just read a little bit from The Hearts of Darkness. As I said, if you support WBAI, I will send you a PDF or e-version of this book. Any pledge you make to WBAI, the new edition of this book, I'm reading from the second edition. The third edition is coming out on June 15th. And also, please feel free to send me your email address, because I'm going to have a Zoom reading of my book when the third edition comes out. And my email is malimadi@gmail.com. It's malimadi@gmail.com. So let me read this a bit here. This is going back when the so-called explorers went to, quote-unquote, discover Africa, which was populated by Africans, the original human beings. So this is what one of the explorers, so-called explorers, Samuel Baker, wrote in 1866. So let me read straight from the book. Many Africans reared under the colonial system and even the post-colonial one, which was still British influence, were taught to revere Baker as a, quote, great explorer, end quote, and even a hero. They are unfamiliar with the contents of his book and Baker's deep-seated abhorrence of Africans. Quote, I wish the black sympathizer in England could see Africa's innermost heart as I do. Much of their sympathy would subside, end quote, Baker wrote in one passage. Quote, human nature viewed in its crudest state as pictured among African savages is quite on a level with that of the brute and not to be compared with the noble character of the dog. There's neither gratitude, pity, love, nor self-denial, no idea of duty, no religion, but covetousness, ingratitude, selfishness, and cruelty. All are thieves, idle, envious, and ready to plunder and enslave their weaker neighbors. Quote, so long as it is generally considered that the Negro and the white man are to be governed by the same laws and guided by the same management, so long will the former remain a thorn in the side of every community to which he may unhappily belong. When the horse and the ass shall be found to match in double harness, the white man and the African black will pull together under the same regime. It is the grand era of equalizing that which is unequal, that has lowered the Negro character and made the black man a reproach, end quote. So that's just a little bit. And people say, why do we write books about these issues? Because these issues never go away.
No, they don't.
And the world is governed by this pervasive white supremacy. You know, and we see that manifestation everywhere, here in these United States, in Africa, in the African diaspora all over the world, you know. But why don't you go ahead and give me some more summations before we take a station break?
I was just going to say something interesting in listening to your reading just now, where he actually puts the dog above the humanity of us, right?
Absolutely.
And you know, we saw that play out, of course, because if that officer had did to a dog what he did to George Floyd. Oh. I mean, look at how some of these people are still trying to crucify.
Colin, you're right. His own home would have been torched.
Right? Yes, absolutely. I mean, but it just shows you, you know, the level of hate of many of these people, you know, and I mean, I'm not even going to go too much into the history of it, because for people like them to be challenging our humanity is just insane. Because right. if what is happening to them was happening to us, there wouldn't be any talk about any peaceful protest.
Absolutely. Absolutely. I mean, look, I'm glad you put it that way, Colin, because look, in South Africa, mm-hmm. the victims of apartheid, one exactly. of the most worst forms.
Exactly.
And so those architects of apartheid, by the way, Vera Wolf, Malan, and all those people had PhDs, and they studied mm-hmm. what had happened in Nazi Germany.
Right.
Before they instituted apartheid in South Africa in 1948.
Correct. In and fact, yet, look, in at the fact, end of the day, you probably know more than me with this, but didn't they?
No. But wait, the point I want to make was that at the end of the day, even after all that suffering, mm-hmm. Africans in South Africa did not seek revenge.
Exactly, with the Truth and Reconciliation Commission. Yeah, correct.
Absolutely, and I bring that up because you said if the shoe was on the other foot, what would happen?
Yeah. There wouldn't be no peaceful protest. Look at the other day when they marched on the Michigan Capitol with their guns and all this. Nobody in the media and all these other people who are now, you know, they're wrapping themselves in a mantle of Dr. King with peace and all of this stuff. They don't say any of this when they're doing the day-to-day policies that is inflicting economic violence on people. Right. But all of a sudden, they're remembering Dr. King and asking for peace and all this stuff. But when these guys, you know, are marching with their guns, no, none of them are talking about, you know, march peacefully and all that. What would happen if we was marching with guns, got guns, was marching around?
And that's a good point. Or that many people seem to be traumatized that a target was set on fire.
Right.
They were traumatized by that, but not traumatized by the public execution.
Right. Of, you know, I mean, it's
George Floyd.
Yeah.
And I agree with you. More people might have actually been traumatized had he strangled a dog in that manner.
Oh, absolutely. You
know, I don't think his house would have survived not being torched. To be
absolutely. They're still trying to get Vic.
Right. But let's take a station break now, and we will be right back for the second half. Russia.
Until the philosophy which old one race superior and another inferior is finally and permanently discredited and abandoned. Everywhere is war. It's a war that until they're no longer first class and second class citizens of any nation, until the color of a man's skin is of no more significance than the color of his eyes, miss a war that until the basic human rights are equally guaranteed to all without regard to race, it is a war that until that day the dream of lasting peace, world citizenship, rule of international.
Welcome back, listeners, to the second half of our show. This is Black Star News Show. I'm your host, Milton Ali Mahdi, on 99.5 FM, WBI, New York. And today, my guest is Colin Benjamin, managing editor of Black Star News. And we're discussing the public execution of George Floyd by Derek Chauvin in the Minneapolis Police Department. As we begin the second half of our show today, once again, I remind readers that a station like WBI depends on the support of listeners such as you. So please do pick up the phone and dial 516-620-3602. Any pledge you make will go to good use. And you can also go to give, then the number 2, WBI.org. And you can adopt a show and support that show on a monthly basis. The money is taken out of your credit card or your debit card. And I hope that indeed Black Star News Show is one of your favorite shows. Colin Benjamin.
Yes, sir.
Let's continue this conversation. I think in the second half, perhaps we now should explore some possible solutions. I have some ideas I wrote in our editorial, which is on blackstarnews.com. We welcome listeners to go to our website. I think I call the headline, Execution of George Floyd, How to Reform the Police, and I listed some possibilities. But before we get into that, I want to say, you know, one of the saddest things about all this is that it really distracts us away from discussing critical issues such as the class condition
True.
In the United States. The fact that so much destruction and collapse is because so much wealth is concentrated in the hands of the few.
So few.
The one percenters. We are distracted, and we cannot avoid being distracted after a horrific murder of this nature.
Right.
But the beneficiaries of these distractions or diversions are the one percenters. We don't have to account for the fact that we have the wealth and income inequality that afflicts communities of color, particularly impact adversely when you have the white versus wealth gap, for example, by a ratio of 10 times, $17,000 average for black households and $170,000 for European Americans. We have unemployment historically. You can go at every stage. Look 50 years ago. Look 25 years ago.
Right.
Look 15 years ago. Look contemporary. Of course, contemporary is different because COVID has now utterly disrupted the economy. But historically, black unemployment has always been about twice that
of white unemployment.
We've not been able to change that ratio over the last 50 years. And these are serious issues that need to be discussed. Otherwise, the conditions of impoverishment are going to keep on increasing. That's why rednecks, racists like Derek Chauvin really do us a great disservice by aiding and abetting the one percenters in addition to inflicting such damage to our communities. But let's discuss.
Well, let me say something on that too.
Go ahead. Say something.
Because there's a because there's a connective point here too.
Thank you.
So right now you have a lot of talk about the looting and about the hijacking of the protests. But what a lot of them are losing or they're not talking about connects to most of what you just said. A lot of those people who are looting, they're not just looting to loot. A lot of those people are the same unemployed black people and other people that you're talking about. A lot of them are people that have a lot of needs. And we do know that historically with a lot of these incidents, there's always been an economic, there's always the economic component behind of it, which is connected to the looting in my view.
Absolutely.
So when they're acting as if like, oh, look at them looting, but not dealing with the economic
issues
of where they come from.
No, I agree with you 100%.
I mean, in fact, just dishonest.
In fact, by overreacting to those, the instances of these, the looting or vandalism, and, you know, just overreacting, these riots, bringing down the country and all that, when in fact, the concentration of wealth with the 1% is what's bringing down the country.
It's connected to it. It's directly.
By overreacting, they're also trying to avoid the issue, the discussion that needs to be had,
correct,
which is the income and wealth inequality and gap. I agree with you.
Totally. And its connection to white supremacy.
Absolutely.
You know?
And then you have this demonic, crazy, racist president at the White House.
Oh, boy.
Uttering insightful words.
When the looting,
you know, starts. When the looting starts, the shooting starts.
Is
and these are terms that were used by a mayor in Miami and other
racists
in the 60s, saying, you know, we don't care if you call this police brutality. We're going to go after these thugs. So he knows what he's doing, and he has not an iota of moral rectitude.
I mean,
in this instance, this is the same guy, Colin. Do you remember when he was somewhere on Long Island? When he said,
we're talking to the police officers. Don't handle them gently.
So in fact, Derek Chauvin and all these other people that commit these crimes,
they love hearing him say that. Right.
Absolutely.
Right.
Of course. I mean, but listen, we will run out of time without discussing
this needs more than 1 hour, brother.
Oh, no. We will definitely do a follow-up. But here are some of the things that I was thinking about. And you've written about this also in the past. Number one, this is something actually that you've written about a couple of times. In New York, it's called the 48-hour rule.
Correct.
When incidents, police officers involved in egregious incidents.
Where they get time to fix their stories.
They get 48 hours. They're not obligated to speak to investigators. And that's supposedly so they can get legal representation. With the powerful union they have, and all the lawyers they have access to, they should not need 48 hours for that. So that's an issue that I hope elected officials, and I hope actually it's going to also take a combination, because elected officials don't act or do the right thing on their own. This is where the protests come into play.
Right.
Absolutely. And I have to say, I'm glad that I'm seeing a more diverse, multi-ethnic mix in these protests, because I hope more European Americans repudiate what Amy Cooper was trying to suggest, that white supremacy and whiteness should always prevail. No, join these protests and let's put pressure on elected officials. So that 48 hours, and it's in many departments around the country. That should go, number one. Number two.
Some, I think, have 30 days and all this kind of crazy.
Imagine that. That's preposterous. That's just unconscionable. And then what do you say about community policing? I don't see people being recruited from Harlem or Bed-Stuy to join police forces in the suburbs to police the suburbs.
No. I think they're not going to let that happen.
People should either live or have that historical connection to those communities that they police. Because when they come from the suburbs, many of them come with that attitude. It's us against them. So they're already predisposed to be in a confrontational state of
posture. Right.
I think that's something that needs to be instituted sooner rather than later. And then I also think there's no reason why, if you commit a clear act of murder, like what Derek Chauvin did, that it should take 4 days for you to be arrested.
Right, exactly. Only on the protest, too.
Only after buildings started burning. You're right. Had they arrested him immediately and charged them, there might not have been any protest. But, you know, history follows sometimes its own course, right? Okay, so how many have we enumerated now? Three?
Two or three.
Okay, and another point that really should happen is that when an officer is convicted of a serious crime like that, I don't see why he should keep his pension.
Correct. Exactly correct.
They should not keep his pension.
Right.
Because I think that is something very concrete. It might make them start to actually police themselves.
Oh, it will. If you take that away, it will.
Think about it. If you think, I'm going to kill somebody and get away with it anyway, and I'm still going to have my pension, retire with my pension, and get a security job somewhere else. No.
And it's just like when they get sued, too. It's the cities that are paying for it. You know, if a lot of that money was coming out of their accounts, you know, just like you said, the pensions and their accounts.
They felt it, right?
Yes, yes. Absolutely.
And this is another thing I think needs to be instituted as well. When they're involved, when police officers are involved in egregious situations such as that, they should be subjected to drug and alcohol tests.
Mm-hmm.
It's no secret. Mm-hmm. It's no secret that it's drug issue and alcohol is a problem.
Right. As well as domestic violence among them.
Domestic
as well.
Violence. It's all interconnected. So they should be tested. They should not be afforded them, because that means we are potentially subsidizing something that is going to lead to a deadly incident.
Right.
This should not be allowed. People are tested when they're in less egregious situations.
Exactly.
So why should police officers not be tested for drugs and alcohol? That clearly
and also, again, if you have domestic violence issues on your thing, those should be red flags.
Absolutely. If you have domestic violence issues, if you're being kicked out of the NFL,
right,
NBA, and other, I don't see why you should, maintain a job.
Are we going to let you be a police officer?
Have a gun. Where you have a gun, and you're going to take out the frustration you may have at home or on some other.
Because I forget the exact figure. It's a much higher rate of domestic violence against them than the population.
And
other thing that don't get talked about.
Right. And we're not suggesting that this is not a stressful job. Of course not.
Right.
You always say that. But some of the stress, I think, is built in inherently, because structurally it is incorrect. You're policing an environment where you're predisposed in your mind to think it's us versus them.
And
so maybe we will be helping you by taking you out of that environment as well. Don't police places you don't want to.
Right.
But go ahead. You were about to say something.
No, I was just going to say to that, the whole militaristic thing that is the main thing behind the police, that it has to be challenged to. Because, like right now, again, they're talking about all this peaceful protest when most of the police... I'm not going to say most of the police, but in many instances, it's more might makes right with them first. We saw what just happened here with them driving through protesters.
Right.
And people the mayor making excuses.
Right. When tell listeners what he said again, some listeners somehow may not have.
What he said was that basically it was the protesters started it, and that supposedly they surrounded the vehicle. They did not surround the vehicle. If you look at the tape, there were protesters in the front who were trying to block their path, but they could have backed up. And one of the vehicles in particular came while the protesters were trying to block that first one, and that particular whoever officer was driving that, he took an aggressive stand to like, I'm gonna just run through them. So it was so dishonest, and he is, he's a disgrace. It's sad that I got to say this.
Who is a disgrace?
The mayor. I'm sad that I have
the
to
mayor say of New York City.
Yes,
you're calling the mayor of New York City a disgrace.
He
tell
is a disgrace
why
because
come to that conclusion.
And it's sad that we have to say that, but this is a person that was elected with a lot of promises to the black and brown community specifically on this issue. That he was going to bring all this change and all of this. And now when you listen to him, especially after incidents like this, he sounds more like Pat Lynch or one of these PBA union apologists.
Listeners who Pat Lynch is. Sometimes not everybody knows the things
Pat Lynch is, the PBA president of the New Era.
Police
New York
Benevolent
City.
Association. I like the names that these groups always have. Police.
Yeah, benevolent. Yeah, benevolent. Benevolent too, right? Yeah.
Benevolence with a few broken black necks. Okay. Now, there are two other points that I also wanted us to touch on in terms of possible reforms that need to be done. And one of them, of course, is that who gets to prosecute cases?
Mm-hmm. Absolutely.
Because we saw what happened with the Eric Garner case.
Absolutely.
We know why Pantaleo was never criminally prosecuted.
Absolutely.
And I want you to discuss that in a minute. And we saw what happened to Michael Brown.
Right.
Same thing. So why don't you remind listeners?
Well, I mean, there were three prominent cases where the prosecutors basically hijacked the process.
You right, just take us through one by one.
You just mentioned Dan Donovan in Staten Island with the Eric Garner thing, where we still don't really know a lot of what really happened because it's shrouded in this, you know, they use this whole thing about the secrecy thing in New York. So we still don't know a lot of what.
In terms really of the details.
Of the details. But the thing
that wasn't he running for Congress as a Republican?
That's what I was just going to say.
Okay, I'm sorry.
He ended up, in my view, used this as a stepping stone to run and win for Congress. I think knowing too of the power of police officers who live on Staten Island, because there's a good percentage of them that live on Staten Island, and he used that, in my view, as a stepping stone to that.
In other words, Eric Garner's death was good for his political career.
Oh yes, absolutely.
And we're not saying that he ordered it, of course. We're just saying
because all of them want to be seen as pro law and order.
Right.
And this includes.
But you know, even when they say that, it's as if black people don't want law and order. They're corrupting that term. It's not law and order.
Right.
That's lawlessness.
But here's the reality.
Marginalized.
I would say that we are more lawful, especially given what we have gone through. Because like I said earlier.
Gone through and still go through.
And still go through. Because I don't see if the white majority in this country went through a fraction of what we go through, there wouldn't be no peaceful
anymore. I agree with you. They would be right? much more demanding because
we are
and that's a good point you bring up. They say human beings are entitled to these sets
of
ideals.
We are the most humane.
But part of the problem, not only humane though, part of the problem is that we are also subjected to historical demonization over centuries.
Correct.
So we also, some of us at least, lower our self-worth.
True.
That's we diminish what we think we're entitled to.
No, that's
and you know, I just thought of putting it that way, just listening to what you just said.
No, you're correct.
Know? And I hope people are saying, I hope people start saying enough is enough is enough.
It needs to be.
So you mentioned Staten Island. And what other the
we
one
also
in
had, we also had in the Michael Brown case, we actually had Bob McCullough use the grand jury in the most perverse way. He used the grand jury basically as a defense team. I don't know of any other case where in a grand jury the prosecutor uses a grand jury to attack the witnesses.
It was, right? We're not shocked. Wasn't there stories that this is an individual, McCulloch, whose father was a police officer
who got killed
in the line of duty?
Right.
So, you know, but that's why I think we need special prosecutors in cases
this. You're right.
I don't think, with all due respect to district attorneys, you know, many of you do a good job. Dedicated law enforcement officials, but district attorneys work too closely with the police.
I have a quick story on that.
Because they need to work together to prosecute many of these cases.
Right.
So it's very difficult to imagine them going aggressively. DAs going after.
I have a quick story on that.
Officers.
I'll make it quick.
That come in. But wait, give us the third one because we're going to run out of time.
Okay,
give us the third example.
The third one was Tim McGinty in Ohio with Tamir Rice, where they did not charge the officer loanman who came. He actually was fired from another police department because they were talking about he was so immature and all of this stuff. Then he gets hired by this other police department. Then he ends up killed Tamir Rice within, 2-3 seconds. I think you pointed out at one point about how they were basically trying to cover their behinds after the fact. You know, because they were scared of lawsuits, but he also use that process to say, well, oh, you know, he didn't see anything wrong with lawmen showing up and killing a 12-year-old within 3 seconds, 2 seconds or 3 seconds, in a playground across from where he lived.
It's just unacceptable. Okay, so you said you had a quick story, and no, literally about a minute.
Yeah, I know. The other quick story in terms of, we got to definitely do more on this. The other quick story in terms of the prosecutors, some years back, I met an assistant DA when I was doing this class. And he was very antagonistic to some of the things I was saying. It was him and two rookie officers. But later, it ended up where I ended up with him and the person who taught the class, and then he was giving me praise, even though he was antagonistic against me in the class.
Explain that to me.
What I realized was what he was basically saying is I had to act like that in front of these officers. I couldn't be seen as agreeing with what you were saying.
You just make my point. They need each other. Yes. They're not willing to antagonize each other. Okay, that's a very good short story. One other thing that needs to happen, and we mentioned
so many things. I would say that with the police body cam thing comes, have to be a major thing that we have.
Oh, yes, please go ahead. Say that first, and then let me bring up the other thing.
They have to absolutely make it where it's mandatory for them not only to have body cams, but that you're going to be severely punished if you mess with the body cams, like what they did with the Alton Sterling case.
Right, right.
Where all of a sudden,
both of them.
Yeah, they malfunctioned at the same time.
There's some words that sometimes you feel like using, but you can't use on radio. But
yeah, and we probably even also, in terms of the camera thing, should look at having even more cameras in the facilities.
And in addition to that, Colin, I would suggest that the cameras record directly to a hardware in the police headquarters.
Exactly. Yeah,
that's another way.
Exactly.
So that you still have the evidence,
even if
these crooked officers destroy it. And then we've run out of time. I'm sorry.
Yeah,
but the other thing
is
no spin doctoring.
Right.
Attorneys general need to review the operations of all these public relations departments in police departments. Because that's another tactic that they use to subvert justice by spinning the story and feeding false and feeding disinformation, disseminating disinformation.
Right, correct.
But we run out of time. Listeners, I encourage you to go to blackstarnews.com. My guest today was Colin Benjamin, managing editor of Black Star News. He is my colleague, of course, and you've been listening to Black Star News Show on WBI Radio 99.5 FM. You can contact me at Ali Mahdi on Twitter. My email is malimahdi@gmail.com. Colin, why don't you provide your contact in case people have news tips for you?
You know, they can send me an email at colin_b30@yahoo.com.
Okay, very good. We're out of time. Listeners, stay strong, stay Pan-African, and we'll always bring you the best we can. Please support WBAI 99.5 FM. I will talk to you again soon.
stuff.